Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another episode of The Last Knock. I am your host, Billy Crash. Johnny's not here. He's actually moved. He moved with his cat. So I don't know if the cat's out of whack more than Johnny, but that's the way it is. And it's his bad day because I have a very special guest. I know I say that often, but this woman is stellar. She has no less than 255 acting appearances to her credit on the screen. She is also a producer, a screenwriter, a director, cinematographer, and more. She's done it all. She's always listed at the top of favorite scream queens, and she's so much more than that, and I'm honored to have her on, and that is the wonderful, the lovely, the vivacious Debbie Rochon.
Wow, thank you, Billy. That's quite a introduction. I hope I live up to it. And, you know, don't forget, book writer.
That's right. You do so much.
well, in fairness, the first one will be coming out next year. So you didn't know that, Billy. So that's
all right.
But you will get one, right?
Oh, my God. Of course I'll get one.
Awesome. Okay, from the underbelly to the underground. And that's all. I'll nice. Leave that there.
Nice.
Oh, thank you for the introduction. That was awesome.
Oh, well, it's really well deserved because one of the things that I've always admired about you is any character that you play, even if you play a vulnerable character or a soft character, it's like just looking into your eyes, it's like there's more here and you don't want to meet what that might possibly be, because this is a strong person. This is a person who is not going to take it. And I always loved that about you and the characters that you present. So,
well, thank you. You know, I think that, and trust me, this has nothing to do with pushing the sale to the book, but honest to God, really though, what I went through, I bring it all. Like I always have, whether I've known it or not, and through all of my studies of acting, I try to bring everything with me. It just, that's the way it goes, because if you're drawing upon yourself, that's part of me, you know. So
sure.
It kind of, I appreciate you noticing it, because a lot of people, there's different groups of people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Understandably so. And so you have like a lot of the people who are just love trauma, and I love trauma, so it's totally great and completely awesome, and I appreciate every last one of them, because they're truly there for you. Like they're really loyal. So what
right.
more do you want? Is like, as opposed to in this current day and age where, you know, people could turn on anybody in a split second for saying, you know, and instead of but, you know what I mean?
It's just,
and then
yes.
they'll cancel you pretty much. So, you know, it says a lot. I don't throw that out lightly. They're very loyal.
I know.
But and there's also this other group of films that I've done that are more serious. And then there's another group of films that I've done that are just really quite often I have done them to help out struggling or new filmmakers. So some of them turn out amazing and some of them don't, but it's never from a lack of trying. So you've got like all these different groups of people and they don't always intersect. So one may have a certain opinion. Oh, that the trauma one, the trauma girl, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not false. And then you have the other side. Oh yeah. Color from the Dark and all these, you know, more heavy stuff and, you know, American Nightmare. Yeah. Like all that stuff. And that's correct. And then you also have the other. Oh yeah. You know, I've seen her in a couple of, $2 movies and that's not untrue either, because to be honest with you, through it all, in between like some of the best movies that I've made, I've also been there for other people when they're, like I say, either starting out or they're struggling, and I don't just that's also kind of what happens when you are your own manager, agent. And I've always been that, and I've had a few now and again throughout the years for various parts of time, And I just felt like ever since the first one, before I was really even doing a whole lot, I think she did the paperwork for me for Abducted 2, the reunion in 94. And, you know, she read the script and everything, and the script reads exactly like the movie, whether you hate the movie or you think now I think it's really funny. I mean, it was done seriously, but it's one of those kind of movies. It's very, very campy. But, you know, she was sort of like, you know, happy to take the money. Yeah, do it, signed on. Then, you know, of course, once she's got the money, it's been long spent on bills and the movie comes in, it's finished. And she's like, yeah, I thought that was horrible. And I was like, well, you read the script, you took your money, you were like all jacked about it at that time. And, you know, and that's okay. She didn't like it. But what I found is, you know, I just, while I don't always have access to the type of people I would like to that they do, that's one thing that's big. But the other side of it too is, you know, the creative freedom of just, you know, doing stuff truly for the art of it, and and being able to say to, you know, various groups of people, what you can do things for. I mean, it's at the end of the day, it's art anyway. And, you know, it's, I don't know. I totally respect people who won't walk out of their house for less than 10 or 20,000. And that's great because they probably have, you know, a house with mortgage and children that are either newborns or in college, and they have a whole bunch of reasons, and they take their career very seriously, which I do too. But that's why I've always kind of lived the nomadic lifestyle. It's much easier to make decisions based on what you want to do, what you think is fun, characters that you want to play that aren't boring and normal, because I can't relate to them. That's the issue I have. I could try, but, you know, I don't relate to them. So I was never attracted to them. And that's, you know, up and down. That's a good thing as far as I'm concerned and what I've done. And it could be a bad thing because, you know, you haven't got that massive nest egg that some people have had you gone a different way. But, you know, once people read, if they in fact do read my book, then they'll understand that, you know, even here in the underground, as opposed to being killed or dying or overdosing during my teen life on the street, just the fact just still alive, that's kind of like a pretty massive big bonus and a pretty big win. So
yeah, hell yeah,
you know, so it's all perspective, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And you know, when I see like somebody who's accumulated so much credit wise you know, as an actress, it's like, well, she's an actress, she loves to act, she can't act if she's at home, you know. It's like, she, you know what I mean?
Yes. That's exactly, and that's the other thing too. It's like, you know, you have a lot of people, a lot of actors, and they are just waiting for, or whether they're being told to by somebody, right or not, you know what I mean? Everybody's different.
Right.
So a lot of people approach it like a business, and that's the agent's jobs, and they have a lot of validation in the people that become successful. But what I say to like the average Joe actor or Joette, if you want to act, fucking act, and fucking act. Like when I first moved to New York, I couldn't even tell you like multiple dozens of student films before I ever, you know, got in front of a camera. I had in Vancouver, background stuff, like sort of featured background stuff, but nothing more. I did a little bit of stage there, very little, but I studied there, started to study there, moved to New York, and just did, once I realized film was just this thing that just grabbed me, I was still doing a lot of stage, but I just was like, I just want to do it. So every freaking NYU thesis film or you know silent film when they're starting out, I was like there. I have so many of them that I've done before I even started, you know, quote working.
Right.
I even did like silly 1-900 commercials, like, you know, I've got a secret. Do you want to hear it? Call.
Oh my God.
1-900 blah blah blah. You know, like that.
I remember that.
all of that crap. I mean, but it was fun. Yeah. You know what? It's fun. Like you said, it's like, are you going to do it or not do it? Are you going to stay home for 20 years and never do it, or are you just going to be like, you know what? I love doing this, so I just want to keep doing this. And that's sort of where I was at.
No, that, I mean, it sounds perfect. I mean, you need to eat, and you never know who you're going to meet, and, you know, mm-hmm. what fun you might have. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
You know, making movies should be fun. And I guess, you know, it's interesting that I would like this answered before you write the book, if you don't mind, just because it boggles my mind every time I see it, and no one ever explains what they're talking about. But, you know, I saw when it first came out, Ladies and Gentlemen, The Fabulous Staines, which I really loved, and I remember you in it because, you know, you're considered a featured extra. And everybody, every time I look at that and I hear people talk about it, it's like, oh, she that role was an accident for her. And I was like, well, what the hell do you mean an accident? Like, she just stumbled on, you know, into the place, you know, with that skunk hair look, and, you know, like, How did that happen?
That's, you know what? In all of my years, and let's be honest here, we're talking decades, I have never had that question put to me that way. So kudos for phrasing it that way.
Yes.
But no, seriously, that's what a great way to ask that question. Okay, so here's what happened. No, I wasn't even looking to be in a movie. Mm-hmm. I was just like, you know, a couple of movies had come to town, like Dennis Hopper directed a movie out of the blue. Mm-hmm. It was not, Vancouver was not the epicenter for film and TV that it is today. Because we are talking 79, 80 mm-hmm. when it was shot. Like, it came out 82, 84, well, it was shelved for 20 years after that. But 79, they were basically doing the casting. 80, I want to say February in 1980, they started shooting thereabouts. And okay, so I wasn't even looking for film work. A friend of mine is kind of, I'll make a long story short, but a friend of mine was the manager of Craig Russell, who was a female impersonator. And he said, hey, why don't you run down to the Denman Hotel? They've rented out a couple rooms there, and they're doing cast. I know that sounds really weird in today's day and age, but there was no studios in Vancouver at that point, like no office spaces for film, because it really wasn't being done there yet.
Right.
And so Lynn Caro, who's still to this day, I'm pretty sure still to this day, Lynn Caro is a famous casting director. I went down there. I don't even think I had shoes on. I mean, I was so poor. I was a street kid.
Yeah.
And she said, I just walked in. She took a Polaroid. She said, would you dye your hair? I said, yeah. Like, dye my shirt. I don't care. You know, and she said, are you free? Yeah, I'm pretty free. Do you have a phone number? No, I don't. Well, call me back, and you know, there's no doubt that we could use you, and the fact that you're completely available and you're willing to dye your hair, like bleach it out, then that's kind of what made me one of the persons that was used, even if I wasn't in like a lot of the final cut, but I was a person that was used a lot because I was always available. I wasn't like one of these other girls that was like, you know, kind of that more Valley girlish. They actually had a home and parents, and they just like, no, I can't dye my hair. You just got to spray it white. And it just looked yellow, or they had like a piece of a wig, but mine was like hardcore real. Nice. And I was just like, wow, like 3 months, like, you know, I had somewhere to stay. I was making $300 cash.
Wow.
They gave every Friday. Why in cash? I mean, these things don't happen anymore. It almost sounds, you know, unbelievable, but that's what it was.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was just like, wow. And I worked for 3 months on that movie, and it really changed my life. But that's how awesome. I got there, was just by someone saying, like, there's obviously no internet. Well, maybe for NASA or something at that point, but there wasn't, you know, any newspaper I saw it in. It was just somebody saying to me, go down to the Denman Inn that was on Denman Street. It was a big fancy hotel. You know, this person's right. doing the casting up there. Her name is Lynn Caro, and go. And I did. And that was it.
That's awesome. Oh, man. Yeah, I haven't been to Vancouver since 89. Holy crap. That's a long time ago.
Yeah, that is a long time ago.
I loved it, though. I thought it was so hip and cool and beautiful, and I had a blast.
Yeah, and it was still, it was probably just growing out of its, you know, even though it was always beautiful, it was mm-hmm. probably just still had rough edges. I know it does now, but it's also been built up to be, you know, this film center.
Yeah.
So it's so different to me that, you know, while, you know, I'm from there and stuff, it's just, it's unrecognizable to what I was used to anyway.
Mm. See, I loved it because it there was so much alternative punk stuff going on still at that time. And I'm like, I'm going to move here, you know?
Just like, oh my God. Yeah. I saw the Ramones. I saw like so many, Billy Idol. I mean, David Bowie, all these amazing people there, and the scene, and lots of ska. I didn't see the specials, but I saw Selector and
nice. They're awesome.
Great, yes, and all these great bands. So yeah, it was really good for that because you know that was a place to stop for these what I guess sort of kind of underground, some more than others, right? But
yeah,
yeah.
Oh man, when I was there, I was supposed to see, it didn't happen, and I'm so upset. Doug and the Slugs. I don't know if you know them.
Oh, I don't know their music.
That's
I
okay.
Know the name though. Yeah.
That's okay. Yeah, and I was like, oh, I can't make it. Oh. That's one of my biggest musical regrets. But I saw the Ramones, so I'm happy with that.
Yes.
So.
Boy, oh boy.
Yeah.
Taking me back. Well, this is the headspace I've been living in writing the book, so it's kind of normal for me right now.
Yeah. So is it how has it been? Because this is clearly a biography, so you're reliving all of that, and not all of it was pleasant.
Right. So it's really weird
and
really hard. And the book is about from 74 to 84.
Oh,
and
wow,
so,
okay.
You know, it's so funny because my very dear friend, Michael Thurber, I know he posted somewhere, I hope you mention me, but you know, he's such a dear, he means it in the funniest way and he really wants it too, but that's my dear friend, Michael, hello, if you're listening, that will be the next book, Michael, that's the next book, because the next one will have to be like, maybe a 20-year span because although 10 years, it's like you'd be surprised when so much is going on that, I mean, you could just sort of do this as a cursory one chapter, but for me, it's impossible. Mm. Like, how do you describe having your, you know, your head cracked open with a crowbar?
Jesus
and
Christ.
Like so much, you have to put everything in context. So this is kind of like the prequel to the film, and then there might even be a sequel, we'll see. But like, it's almost really has to be like, I don't know what you'd call it in the comic book world, but you would, it's like it's the background, but the background isn't just like, oh, I was born here at this time and my parents did A, B, and all that stuff, and oftentimes is extremely painfully boring. Not always, but oftentimes. So whereas this is kind of like, you know, it's a three-ring circus, my life. So this is like not just a boring segment. It's kind of like one of the rings, if you will.
Yeah, yeah. Oh man, so you are your own historian, looking back It's like
Yeah, and it's really weird because I can only write the truth. And
Sure.
so that's what I'm doing. But quite often I'm thinking, holy shit, like if I say this, which I am, what the fuck? People gonna be, what? But no. And then you go, no, you can't even think about that. I mean, you have to just write the truth and not give two shits. But that stuff does creep up, and you're only human, and that's what it is.
Well,
But I'm very jacked about it, and it's coming out next year.
Yay. So it must be very therapeutic process. Besides being painful, there must be, I hope, cause for celebration in many ways for you.
Yes. I mean, there is, because it's a joy to write, as far as like using language to, describe these things, because you could describe the same event 100 different ways.
Oh,
And
yeah.
quite often, I really like describing things not in an intentionally humorous way, but just if you're in like the weirdest, bizarrest, most fucked up situation, it all depends on, it depends how you like, from what viewpoint are you telling this? So it's always got that really pitch black humor.
Right.
So, it's been more uncomfortable than enjoyable, but at the end, it's gonna be something that my entire life I have wanted to do. So,
Oh, great.
major, yeah. But well, I wouldn't say bucket list is a stupid thing to say. I don't mean that, but I mean like accomplishment. I mean, holy shit. Yeah, I've wanted to do it my entire life. I've kind of been obsessed with it. So, yeah.
Awesome. I love it. Man, you have such passion in you for everything that you do. And I know I'm going to use this as like a really weird segue. Is that how you like, when did you decide, you know what, I want to direct, damn it?
Well,
How did that play out?
it's funny because, it's the opposite of what you just said,
Get out.
kind of. I mean, prior to me doing it, that's how I felt, because I felt like, okay, you know what? I've seen it so many damn times, like people directing, whether, whether I was behind the scenes or in the film, or just so many times I've lost count, and some I like, some I don't like, some approaches I like, some are, just they're so routine and basic and kind of business boring, if you will. And then there's some that are amazing, just fucking inspired, like every time, every speck of dust in every frame has a fucking meaning, and that's what I like. That's what I like. Like when I watch movies, I look for that. Like, is it
Awesome.
detailed? Is there a double meaning if I'm willing to take the time to look?
Right.
And if I don't see it, the story still plays on, right? That's the kind of stuff that I like. So anyway, fast forward from whenever time that was. I always thought to myself, okay, nobody deserves to direct unless they know every damn thing, because I'm tired. I don't want to see anything mediocre. So I was always like, well, I don't know every damn thing. Like, I can shoot with my small hand camera, but I'm not a DP professionally. I'm not a lighting person professionally. I know what I like. I can give descriptions and examples, and I can kind of get something to look a certain way, but I'm not a pro. So I was like, okay, well, how do you speak? How do you have the language to speak to these professionals, unless you know how to do it yourself? And so I always thought, no, I don't want to be that asshole. And so when then, but then
But then
here's how everything changes. Then James Mogart came along. I'd done a couple movies with him. Wanton Baby was the first one. That was his directorial debut. And then he said to me, I just want you to read this script, just like that. I just want you to read this script. It's called Model Hunger. So I read it, and I was like, this is fucking amazing. I was like, holy shit. Like, it was amazing. I mean, it really, like, it, my mind was going like into like details of like, you could do this and that could be a man instead of a woman, and that could be a woman instead of a man, and this entire 5-page monologue can be cut out and one physical action could say it all, and like but adding on what he had done, not taking away, sort of like my mind was, you know, it was full of possibilities, and it just did that. And so he called me and he said, so what'd you think? And I said, it's fucking amazing. I said, whoever directs this, man, there's so many things they could do with it. And he said, would you want to?
I was
like, I was like, yeah. And I was like, I was thinking in my mind, how? And he was like, this is before he got married and had a family, in all fairness. And so he personally borrowed all the money to make the movie. And so it was like, it wasn't about searching around for the money for 150 years and trying beyond anything to raise it, and just having to sacrifice so damn much and go on and on and on. Anyway, and there's nothing wrong with that. That just shows that how much you want to make a movie when you go through all that. But, you know, I was just like, holy cow, that's incredible. You can really trust me with this, huh? So there was a couple of things that sort of got in the way just prior to production, which switched a lot of things up, and so led to, I think, a little bit, you know, rougher technical aspects of what we got than what should have been. But all in all, even with all the warts and bumps, I really think there's like a lot of gem moments in there. So very happy, very grateful to James Mogart for that. Awesome. Always will be. Yeah.
Excellent. And well, you have like 15 other movies that have either been announced with you in there, or pre-production, or currently, well, filming, I guess, has been postponed across the land. Post-production, but you have a lot more coming out. And I know that you and I have a time constraint today. So I'm going to ask you two things. I'm going to give you that crazy question that people hate. But before that, I'm going to ask you to come on again so we could talk about your book and other things at your leisure in the future, if that's cool with you.
Absolutely. Is one of your questions about the stuff that's coming out? Because I would like to mention it super quick.
Go right ahead. Do that first, and then I'll ask you a question that'll give you a headache. Go ahead.
No, get it out of the way before the headache, because, you know, I got the aspirin on standby, so, I'll be ready.
Okay.
So my very, very good friend Milhouse did this movie called Mystery Spot, which also has Lisa Wilcox in it as well, who's amazing in it. And I just want to give a shout out to Mystery Spot. Like you say, with the COVID-19 and everything else going on, we don't know. Everything's really been thrown off. But I'm extremely proud of him, of the movie.
Cool.
This really elaborately multi-leveled script. I mean, Mystery Spot, please just keep an eye out for it. I'll post when there's more information on it, but really, really happy with that. Shakespeare Shitstorm, speaking of Lloyd Kaufman.
Yes.
That's coming out, it could be this year. I'm not entirely sure, but it's going to festivals this year. And that's sheer insanity. So if you
no,
like that.
No, not from Troma, not from Kaufman.
I know, it's really hard to believe, but... It suits it, even though Lloyd will make other movies if given, you know, if he finds the right script. But for me, it kind of like brackets the Troma experience like so fucking perfectly. The first movie, not the first stuff I did with him, like for TV and everything. The first movie was Tromeo and Juliet.
Yep. Love it. Love it.
And then, sorry, I didn't know if your phone was ringing. Hello. Tromeo and Juliet. Who is that trying to call on this your Skype?
Sons of bitches.
Over here.
Yeah.
So Tromeo and Juliet back in 1995, and then fast forward to, if we don't make another movie, it's kind of bookended with another Shakespeare based on The Tempest. So, mm-hmm. I don't know, just really find that cool. And just a couple real quick things. Bloody Hooker Massacre, which alone the title. Come on, folks. Come on, folks. Bloody Hooker Massacre.
Yes.
You got it. Not sure when that's coming out, but that was a lot of fun. Axe to Grind 2 will be shooting. Hasn't been shot yet. We'll be shooting later this year. I'll be working with my sister in the movie, Stormy awesome. Daniels. And Killer Babes and the Frightening mm-hmm. Film Fiasco. I get to work again with the director from Bloody Ballet, which I'm so amazingly excited about because he's a visual genius and he's a great guy. Freak, I am doing with Bianca. She's the director. Wow. She lives in Philly and I'm excited about that. I just had to get those shout outs in there because sure. I always forget and then I feel bad because these people mean... I only do things that I like anymore, especially like at this point in my life. So when I do something, I like to, you know, make sure I get the people's names out there because they're the ones doing all the, you know, heavy lifting and stuff. I'm just in the movies, but they're all going to be a lot of fun.
Awesome.
So now ask me that horrible question. That's going to give me a raging headache for the rest of the night. Go ahead.
And if you don't have an answer, that's fine. Here we go.
No.
It's fine. It's all good because you're brilliant. It's all good.
Okay.
Because you've done a lot of interviews and everything else, what mm-hmm. hasn't been asked of you in an interview that you wish was asked so you could answer it? Now is your time to give us that answer. What is it? What do you want to say that you haven't been allowed to say, haven't been asked to say in an interview, and you're like, son of a bitch, they only asked that question. I was ready.
And I was ready. Well, I think most people, I sort of build up to it because I don't have an answer off the top of my head. So my quick build up to that is, like I said already, so not to beat a dead horse here, mm-hmm. but... most people just want to focus on either trauma or stuff like, you know, Scream Queen right. stuff like Santa Claus or, and I love Santa Claus.
Yeah.
I love Santa Claus. But, you know, because I think it's funny. I mean, it's not serious, but if you find the humor in it, it's very funny. So anybody who can have a conversation with me about acting
mm-hmm.
without having to use those terms or groups, I find that very refreshing. Even just how you phrased the Ladies and Gentlemen Fabulous Stains lead-in mm-hmm. Was sincere, and it was like you actually thought about it. What becomes tiring is sort of generic questions, and I know I've done the same damn thing when I started writing in the 90s. I promise you I did this myself. But like when it's just kind of like, why did you get into acting? How do you feel about being called a scream queen? which is your, you know what I mean? And I understand it, but it's kind of like, I like, for example, what you did, like we just kind of basically riffed. We didn't necessarily yeah. get everything, you know, that either one of us wanted. I don't know. But that sounds really weird. But
yeah, it sounds like a bad date. I mean, hell.
No, we didn't talk about the real damn stuff, Billy. What the hell? Like, we're going to have to redo this sometime.
That's fine. I mean, well, you have to come on and talk about your book. I mean, I'm...
I mean, obviously, I could talk a lot. So, this is not a problem.
Okay, good. I'm glad we got that out of the way.
Didn't make any sense, though. I don't know.
Oh, you're fabulous. Don't worry about it. It's all good. No, it does make sense. And I was that's why I told my one friend. I was like, I don't know. You know, I don't want to ask her all the same crap. I said, I'm not going to do that. And I didn't, so I'm happy. I hope you're happy.
But I am a success.
Awesome.
Success. I'm telling you right now. And that I can't thank you enough because honestly, I'm going to add this right now. I can't fix. I don't have a problem with people labeling me a scream queen because we all are victims to needing labels. So
I love how you said that.
Understand that. It's so true. But if you go to my website, hey, here's the time for the plug.
Yep.
DebbieRochon.com. You will not ever see me refer to myself as one.
Right.
And to the ladies that do, this is not saying it's a bad thing. This
right.
is just, I come from like, when we're talking a long time ago now, but 80s and 90s, I was like doing a shitload of theater. So
right.
yeah, it's, I did exploitation as well for Cinemax. Yes, I did. But it's all like all over the map, you know? So
mm-hmm.
that's just one part of it. And it's always, like I said, after Broadcast Bombshells came out, okay? This
right.
is what I said in 96. I said, these are going to be, no matter what I do artistically, like say it's the most genius thing ever. Broadcast Bombshells is going to be the thing that the most people will see. And then I could say that more recently too, like I've done these movies I'm proud of, like Exhumed,
right.
Color from the Dark, Wrath of the Crows, Bloody Ballet. There's a whole bunch of them, like Satan Hates You, Nowhere Man, really good high quality movies, and there's more, and I love Slime City Massacre, but people are going to remember the stuff that's on TV because it gets in front of the most amount of people.
Yeah.
Like not earlier this year there was an episode of what was it, These Woods Are Haunted.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like one of the reenactment actors, because I was like, you know what, I'm tired of waiting for a Bigfoot movie, I'm just going to do this for fun because I want to be like the person, you know, running from and trying to beat down the Bigfoot. And this is the opportunity that I'm seeing, is like, can I be in this? Yes. Okay. Let's do this. Spend 3 days doing that episode. So I did it. And so, you know, I had fun with Bigfoot, and of course, you know, more people, and people that I don't know, it's not like people bring it up to me or anything, that are in like the hardcore horror circle,
right.
but I can guarantee you that, just, you know, populace wise more people have seen that than anything I've ever done,
right?
So wow. There you go. I mean, that's just the way it is. TV is like, that's the thing.
Yeah, yes it is. Can't get away from it, especially now under quarantine.
No, exactly. I know, and it has to come on during quarantine, so
mm-hmm.
really, I have a captive audience, no doubt.
You're saving lives. You're helping people from going batshit crazy, so we
okay.
thank you, Debbie. We thank
oh.
you.
Well, I thank you, Billy. This is great. This is really great.
Oh, thank you. And we could also find you, people could also find you on Twitter, or... Where do you want to direct?
Yeah, just DebbieRochon.com, because it has all of the social
links.
Media links there.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some people who try to be me or whatever. So you know you're getting the right one if you just go to my website and just click through there.
Damn straight. And ladies and gentlemen, you can find The Last Knock on Spotify, iTunes, also at CrashPalaceProductions.com. But Debbie, I can't thank you enough for taking time to come on, and... I'm so excited about your book. I'm a big reader. I can't wait to get it in my hands. So no pressure, but I'm looking forward to the day that's coming off the presses. So thank you.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I wish I had a month, but we'll find all that out pretty soon. And I'll come on again and talk endlessly about it, torch
awesome.
You a little bit, Billy, and maybe, who
Ooh.
Knows, Johnny might be around. And,
the
you
hell
know,
with him.
Get the, yeah, forget. Sorry, I feel bad I even said that. Forget Johnny. Never mind him. He's not allowed. Just me and you.
All right.
And
I love it.
We'll talk about that then. And yeah, thanks for having me on anyway. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. Have a good night now. Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.